Welcome to Pixel Parenting, where we talk about science-based tools, challenges, and opportunities of raising children in today's tech-driven society. I'm your host, Patricia Cangas, a digital marketer, former video game professional, and holder of a master's degree in educational studies by Johns Hopkins University. Welcome to the third episode of the AI Dialogues. Today, Sarah, our expert AI, and I are exploring video game addiction. Thank you, Sarah, for being here. This is a topic that's generating a lot of buzz these days. You imagine a teenager spending hours gaming every day. Is this cause for concern?
Thank you, Patricia. Well, it depends.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, we're going to explore how to recognize when gaming crosses the line from a fun hobby to something more serious. But don't worry, we're not here to demonize games.
What we'll be exploring are the signs of gaming disorder. It's the clinical term, and it's actually recognized by medical professionals. Gaming disorder is defined in the 11th revision of the International Classification of Diseases as a pattern of gaming behavior characterized by impaired control over gaming, increasing priority given to gaming over other activities to the extent that gaming takes precedence over other interests and daily activities, and continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences. Anyways, we'll give you some practical tips on what to do if you're concerned, whether for yourself or someone you care about.
Thank you for that definition. Now, let's break this down. There is scientific criteria that doctors use to diagnose gaming disorder. For instance, one game addiction symptom could be game time play, but not only the playing time, but also spending a lot of time thinking about the game, even when not playing, planning when to play next, and constantly reliving past gaming experiences. Constantly thinking about the game. I actually remember a trip to Prague where everything I saw was related to the Warcraft game I was playing back in the day. Couldn't stop thinking about it.
Oh yeah, that's one of the first signs that things might be getting out of balance.
That's right.
Experts call this preoccupation, and it's a key indicator of gaming disorder. It's not just about thinking about games a lot, though. It's about whether those thoughts are interfering with other parts of your life. Like, are you skipping out on responsibilities or neglecting relationships because you can't stop thinking about your next gaming session? That's when it becomes a problem. But for instance, thinking about gaming a lot doesn't necessarily mean your child is addicted to video games. Many children and teenagers think about their hobbies and interests frequently, especially if they are fun and engaging. Gaming can be an important part of a child's social life and free time, making it a common topic of thought and discussion.
That makes sense. Another symptom of possible gaming addiction, like any other addiction, is the need to play more and more to feel good, or not enjoying gaming as much as before.
Right. It's that classic escalation we see with a lot of addictive behaviors. You need a bigger hit each time to get the same rush. But here's where it gets really interesting. This is where we start to see the connection to the brain's reward system. Games are designed to trigger those dopamine pathways, making us feel good when we achieve something in the game. But when that becomes the primary source of satisfaction in life, we can start to neglect other things that are important for our well-being.
So it's not just about the amount of time spent gaming, but the impact it has on a person's overall life.
Exactly. And that's where things can get tricky. Some people spend hours gaming without it causing any real problems, while others might only play for a short time each day but still experience negative consequences. It's all about the context and the individual.
That's a good point. So, where does that leave us? How can we tell if someone's gaming habits are a cause for concern?
Well, along with intensively thinking about gaming and game escalation, there are a few other red flags. One is withdrawal, feeling irritable, anxious, or even angry when you can't game.
Oh, I've definitely experienced that at some point.
Right. And it makes sense when you think about it. If gaming has become your primary coping mechanism for dealing with stress or boredom, taking it away can feel like you're losing your lifeline.
That's tricky. And another flag of gaming addiction is when people start neglecting important things because of gaming. Jobs, relationships, even basic self-care can start to suffer.
Absolutely. And what's really concerning is when gaming becomes the only thing that brings joy or a sense of accomplishment. It's like all the other colors in life fade away, and everything becomes centered around that one activity.
Yes. Another flag is lying about gaming. Lying to family members, therapists, or others about the amount of time spent on gaming.
Yeah. And I read that experts say that another flag is using gaming to escape or relieve negative moods. Like playing games to avoid bad feelings like sadness or guilt, because, for instance, academic failure and disappointing friends.
Totally. So let's say someone listening to this episode is starting to worry, maybe about themselves, their child or friend. What's the first step they should take?
Well, the first step, and this might sound counterintuitive, is to try to understand the appeal. Why are they so drawn to gaming? What needs is it fulfilling?
That's easier said than done. Some of these games seem completely baffling to many parents. Where do we even begin to understand?
You're right. It can be challenging, but putting yourself in their shoes for a minute can make a world of difference. Imagine someone telling you to stop doing your favorite hobby. You'd probably be pretty defensive. That's why approaching this with genuine curiosity, not judgment, is so important.
So how do you suggest we actually do that?
Well, imagine starting with asking questions, not making accusations. Like, what do you like about games? What kinds of games do your friends play? What makes that game fun? What's your favorite video game? Why? Have you ever played a game that you found super challenging? How did you make it? What is your character build? What do you like about it the most?
Yes, and this also will make you understand what your child likes playing, how they deal with challenges, and you will be able to flag behaviors that may not be healthy. Also, you will be able to understand who they are playing with if it's a multiplayer game, and teach them about online privacy and safety, etc. What communities or relationships are they interacting with or enacting through their gaming? What are they doing? What kind of roles are they adopting in the game? Are they taking a more of a leadership role or a follower role? Or are they playing a support role? Things like that.
Agree. It's about understanding the why behind the behavior, not just judging the behavior itself. Once you understand the appeal a little better, you can start to have more open and honest conversations. No shame, no blame, just genuine curiosity and a willingness to listen.
But what if they just shut down and refuse to talk? That happens a lot with teenagers, doesn't
it? It definitely can. But even then, just demonstrating that you're trying to understand can go a long way. And remember, communication is a two-way street. We need to be open to hearing our kids' perspectives and also modeling healthy tech habits ourselves.
Okay, so let's say you've managed to open up those lines of communication. What's next?
Well, it is important to set realistic expectations. We can't just expect someone to go cold turkey on something they enjoy, especially if it's fulfilling a need for them.
That's true. It's like telling someone to suddenly stop drinking coffee. It's not going to be a pleasant experience.
Exactly. Instead of focusing on restriction, try to shift the focus towards balance. How can we help them incorporate other activities and interests into their lives so that gaming isn't the sole focus?
So it's not about taking away the games, but about adding more good stuff into the mix.
You got it. And this is where leading by example becomes so crucial. If we're asking someone to limit their screen time, we need to be mindful of our own tech use as well. Kids are incredibly perceptive and will pick up on any hypocrisy.
Well, absolutely. They have a sixth sense for that kind of thing. But setting a good example isn't always easy, especially in today's world.
You're telling me, but it's about making conscious choices and setting boundaries. Maybe that means having designated screen-free times as a family, or putting our phones away during meals.
And remember, communication is also about stating the expectations on what to expect after game time. For example, okay, you can finish that level. After that, you have to go play outside with your friends. This removes uncertainty, which can sometimes lead to resistance or tantrums, especially in younger children. When they know what to expect, they can mentally prepare for the transition. Transitions are hard for everyone, including adults, and they are especially hard if the next activity is less engaging or offers less immediate gratification.
Those are great ideas, and along those lines, our source mentions the importance of encouraging diverse interests.
Yes, that's a big one. It's about helping them discover other things they're passionate about, whether it's sports, music, art, volunteering, whatever sparks their interest. It's about broadening their horizons and helping them see that there's a whole world out there beyond the screen.
Exactly. And you know, sometimes introducing them to new activities can be as simple as sharing your own passions with them. What are you interested in? What did you enjoy doing as a kid?
Oh, that's a fun one. Maybe I'll dust off my sewing machine or
drag them along on a hike.
There you go, and who knows? You might even rediscover a passion for something you'd forgotten about.
So, we've talked about understanding the appeal of gaming, opening up communication, setting realistic expectations, and encouraging a diverse range of interests. Are there any other key takeaways from the research you covered?
Yes, and this is a big one. It's about recognizing when professional help might be necessary.
That can be a tough one to admit, can it?
Absolutely. But sometimes, despite our best efforts, we need to call in the experts. If you're noticing that gaming is causing significant distress or impairment in someone's life, it's time to reach out to a mental health professional.
And remember, folks, there's no shame in seeking help. It's a sign of strength, not weakness. But what exactly can a therapist do to help with something like gaming disorder?
Well, they can provide a safe and supportive space to explore the underlying reasons behind the excessive gaming. They can teach coping skills for managing stress and anxiety, and they can help develop healthier habits and routines. Sometimes they might even recommend family therapy to address any underlying family dynamics that might be contributing to the problem.
Family therapy? That sounds intense.
It can be, but it can also be incredibly helpful. It allows everyone to share their perspectives and work together towards solutions.
That makes sense because at the end of the day, gaming addiction isn't just an individual problem, is it? It affects everyone around them.
Exactly. And the more support someone has, the better their chances of overcoming this challenge.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here today. We've talked about the science of gaming disorder, the importance of open communication, and some practical strategies for finding balance. We've also emphasized the importance of leading by example and seeking professional help when needed. You know, one thing I'm still grappling with is why games are so alluring in the first place. What is it about these digital worlds that captivates people so intensely?
That's a great question. You know, it's easy to dismiss video games as mindless entertainment, but there's a whole lot more going on beneath the surface. There are actually some powerful psychological factors at play that makes them so compelling.
I've got to admit, the online gaming community thing can be fun. I was involved in an online game guild and we ended up meeting to play together in person 20 years ago, though. I can understand that for some people, these online connections are a lifeline.
Yes, they can provide a sense of belonging and friendship that might be missing in their offline lives.
That's a really important point. For people who struggle with social anxiety or feeling like they don't fit in, online gaming communities can provide a sense of belonging and acceptance that they might not find elsewhere. So, it's not just about escaping reality, but about finding a community where they feel seen and understood. It is also important to make sure that these communities are safe, especially when we are talking about minors. But that's a topic for another podcast.
Exactly. And those relationships can be just as meaningful as offline friendships. They laugh together. They support each other. They celebrate victories together. It's a real community, even if it exists in a digital space.
And remember, we talked about this in Out first episode. There is also a sense of accomplishment and mastery that the games offer.
That's another huge factor. Think about it in games. You set goals. You overcome challenges. You level up. It triggers a sense of achievement that can be incredibly rewarding.
Oh, totally. It's like that feeling of I did it that we all crave, whether it's finishing a marathon or finally mastering a difficult recipe.
Exactly. And games are designed to give us that feeling in a very predictable, controllable way. You put in the effort, you get the reward. It's a powerful feedback loop that can be very addictive.
And I imagine for someone who's struggling in other areas of their life, those virtual victories can be especially appealing.
Absolutely. If you're feeling like you're failing in school or you're having trouble making friends, that sense of mastery in a game can provide a much-needed boost to your self-esteem.
It's like they've created a world where they can excel, where they have a sense of control and agency.
Exactly, and that can be very attractive, especially for young people who are still trying to find their place in the world.
So it seems like there's this complex interplay of psychological factors at work, the need for connection, the desire for achievement, the escape from real-life stressors. All of these things contribute to the allure of gaming.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. And when we understand those underlying needs, we can approach the issue of gaming disorder with more empathy and less judgment.
So it's not about demonizing the games themselves, but about understanding the human needs that they're fulfilling and finding healthier ways to meet those needs.
Exactly. It's about helping people find balance, connection, and fulfillment in a variety of ways, both online and offline.
Yes. Thank you so much for such a rich conversation. I hope our listeners have gained a much deeper understanding of the complexities of gaming and gaming disorder.
Glad to be here and to discuss a topic that's often misunderstood, but it's one that deserves our attention and compassion.
So, to wrap things up, what would you say is the most important message for our listeners today?
I think the key takeaway is that gaming itself isn't the problem. It's a form of entertainment that can bring a lot of joy and connection to people's lives. The issue arises when it becomes all-consuming, when it starts to negatively impact other areas of life. And when that happens, it's important to remember that there's professional help available.
Absolutely. And remember, we talked mainly about teenagers, although some of it could be applied to younger kids. But we'll dive deep into younger kids in a future episode. So, that's a wrap for today's AI Dialogues. We've explored the complexities of video game addiction, delved into the psychology behind its appeal, and discussed practical strategies for finding balance. If you enjoyed the episode, please follow us or subscribe, and if you have questions, please leave them in the comment section. And remember, this is just the beginning of the conversation. Keep learning, keep questioning, and keep those conversations going.